This podcast contains swearing and occasional disturbing content.
I don't need to live in this physical realm. I walk around in the physical realm. In the spiritual world is where I live. I exist in places you never even dreamed of. Strange.
Hello and welcome to the High Strangers podcast, episode 8. We're getting there.
We are.
We're almost in double digits.
Oh no, look at us go.
Look at us go. Welcome back, lovely listeners. Thanks for joining us on this magical mystery, as we always like to go on, into the dark, foggy worlds of the strange.
Ooh.
Mm. You've got a bit of a recap, haven't you?
Yes.
Oh, and by the way, I'm Gav.
Yeah, I'm Sarah.
And we're your hosts today in this show. If you've never listened to this before, we like to talk about weird things, and quite often it's been about people's minds and the weirdness that they do.
Yeah, we've done quite a lot about that, haven't we? Kind of gone into mental disorders.
We've done a lot of sort of that thing. It's looking at the mental psyche quite a lot.
Stuff, yeah, and like just loads of weird stuff. Did the near-death one, didn't we, as well? So it's kind of like all over the place.
It does seem to be that is more of the episode sort of we cover, because they are just a fascinating one. Because when it comes down to the human, it is a fascinating creature, more than creatures themselves.
I did say a couple of episodes ago, you know, I'm so fascinated by the human mind. Well, it can make so much seem real and like put you into such a different place.
Mm.
Whereas you think you're so in control most of the time, you know.
It's only if you've actually...
kind of going, I've got a different idea.
Well, it's if you've suffered from depression or anxiety or anything like that, and you know that, oh, my mind can crack.
Yeah, totally.
My mind can break a little bit.
Yeah.
Then that opens up the possibilities of, wow. And that doesn't explain anything. When people do criminal activities, you don't think, oh, that's okay, it's because they're mind gone. But the fact that the human brain and the mind and everything is all the same.
Yeah.
We all have the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Except the wiring...
It can be so different.
Everything,
so
just different. from a childhood, one experience.
Yeah.
And that's because the mind is so complex.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's how fascinating it is. And that's why we keep, ladies and gentlemen, coming back to these episodes.
Yes. Ready?
But with you.
You there.
You. I'm going to do a Robert De Niro impression.
Points fingers.
You. I can't do a Robert De Niro impression. You've got a update.
I have, yeah. I've got an update on the Golden State Killer, which was episode 6. Well done.
Yes. I know. As soon as we get into episode 10, I'm like, I can't remember.
I'm like, oh, God, where are we?
Well, the other show I did, a podcast on Haunted Hill,
you're nearly on 100,
episode 97 next, so...
Wow.
You're just going to forget.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to start making a note. Update on the Golden State Killer. Just in June, if you remember, he admitted to 13 murders in a deal to spare him the death penalty. And he also admitted to numerous rapes and burglaries, but because of the statute of limitations, the time had expired, so he couldn't be charged.
Yeah.
So he will now be serving 11 consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole, and 15 concurrent life sentences and other time for weapons charges. So he's definitely going to die in prison, because he's like 72 or 76 now.
Sure,
he's super, super old.
That isn't that super, super old.
Oh.
If he was 106, that's super, super... Or 96, that's super, super
old. I keep forgetting that I'm 76 I'm
isn't super
41.
Old.
41. I'm still, in my mind, I'm still like...
So that's
20.
So
I'm going,
time,
not,
so.
I'm so old now.
It's not.
It's really not that far.
But
for him,
but
you
for
know,
him and
he's
the way
reaching,
he looks...
He's reaching the end of his life, you
yeah,
can
yeah,
tell.
Yeah, from when he was...
He's certainly not going to even pull off one of those fucking life sentences in prison.
Well, of course not. And the trauma of being in prison, he's going to lose weight.
Yeah, for sure.
It's all different,
isn't it?
It
won't last long.
End up with... I guess as soon as you get in prison, you end up having a different diet straight away.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
you'll just get whatever, won't you?
Yeah.
The Sacramento County DA called him a sociopath in action. And he said, I've listened to all of your statements, because all the victim the victims and the victims' families of the rapes kind of went in and did statements, didn't they? They were allowed to say their piece, you know, and obviously if the victim wasn't alive now, they kind of went and got their day in court and kind of got justice, I suppose, in a way, for them. So he had to listen to all their statements about how his crimes had affected them. And he said, "I've listened to all of your statements, each of them, and I'm truly sorry to everyone I've hurt." Mm. Bullshit. I don't believe him. I think he's a fucking prick. He's only sorry because he got caught. As if he's lived his life being bothered about that. He was a cunt. Sorry, but I don't believe that for a second.
It's not like he was taking himself to police to say, "Look, I'm that guy."
Yeah, for sure.
So you can't be that sorry.
Waited, yeah,
he's sorry because he's been caught.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, but at least he is behind bars.
Well, that does beg the question, doesn't it? If you could get away with something and no one ever found out, and that's a guaranteed thing, would you do it? Do you know what I mean?
Personally speaking, I wouldn't be able to live with myself.
Yeah,
I can't lie. Unless he's had some revelation
or something in prison, and he's had time to sit in there and dwell and think about it.
Well, yeah, now
there
because
is
he's
that.
Been caught,
because he was pushed into that scenario.
Hmm.
So otherwise he wouldn't have gone about thinking about it.
Give a fucking shit, would he? Probably would have just died and not told anyone it was him, you know, and be like, "Ha-ha, got away with that."
I still think it's crazy that you're going to live your life looking over your shoulder.
Yeah. Or just live your life knowing that you'd done that to people. Like,
and they still don't have closure or know.
So shitty. That's awful.
And especially lived around the same neighbourhood. Anyway.
There you go.
That's that fucker.
He is behind bloody bars for the rest of his natural.
Mm. So, today, you and I, what are we doing?
Look who's stalking
with John Travolta.
Oh my God. Do not want to see John Travolta at my window.
Having a little wank. Looking out your window.
Oh God, Travolta, get out of my fucking bushes.
Looking over the pants.
Mind you, he probably wouldn't, would he? Travolta gay?
Well, no, he's married. Wife die recently?
I have no idea. Just he's married, that don't mean anything.
I didn't say it did, did I?
He's married.
It wasn't like a full sentence stop there on that.
Okay, sorry. Jumping the gun.
Apparently, he has tried to suck off a guy on an airplane or some shit.
Really?
Or something like that. I don't know.
Oh my God.
Please don't sue us.
Yeah, don't come for us, Travolta.
He's going to fly over, land in the garden. Saturday Night Fever, his ass.
Can he
up
fly
to
a plane?
Yeah, he's a pilot.
Yeah, I thought he was. It was Gary Newman and someone else.
What was Gary Newman? What, he flies planes?
Got a pilot's license.
I thought Gary Newman just liked cars.
I don't know if Gary Newman has actually got a pilot's license. I'm only taking that information from the Mighty Boosh.
Then
I'm assuming
that's
probably not. I'm going to look it up.
I think he just likes cars.
Aeroplanes, though. Gary Newman flying a little plane. It'd be well good.
Look who's stalking.
Yeah.
So, stalking.
We're only a couple of minutes in. We've already gone off on a tangent imagining Gary Newman flying planes. Fuck my life.
Yeah, indeed. Stalking is a interesting thing.
Yeah.
There's like. I'm not even going to say it's a thin line. At times, there's going to be a big fucking thick line between fancying someone or finding someone attractive and then stalking them.
Yeah.
You're going to have the bits where it isn't stalking. Say, innocently, a lady meets a guy, a lady likes a guy, or the guy likes a lady, whatever, and then it's hard, isn't there? And you get, like, the harassing, then going to stalking. But there is a part before which is generally, like, just love or fondness or wanting to do that. Oh, can I get your number? Oh, please, please. And that's like innocentness.
Yeah.
But then it goes too far.
Yeah.
Especially nowadays, we were discussing earlier, with the advent of social media and the internet.
Yes.
There's been cases, murder cases, all sorts, which have started from just in the simple...
Well, yeah.
Add friend. Oh, all right, accept friend ad. Ding.
Yeah, it's easy, isn't it? And it seems to be like... Go on.
I was going to say, because you've had the odd people on Facebook.
Yeah.
Send you an ad, friend. You go, all right then. And then they think, oh great, the door is open.
That's it. That's what I was just about to say. It seems to be like, as soon as you add someone as a friend, it seems to be like an invitation, you know, to, I don't know, just to message continuously. And it's like, if I message someone a couple of times and they didn't get back to me, I'd be like, all right, then whatever, you know, I'm not going to pursue that, I'm not going to continue doing that. So you need to know when to stop. But it just, I don't get, like, I'm talking specifically men here.
Well, well, you're going to get, like, you're going to get women, but it is
harassment.
And when, like, it comes, well, when it comes down to it, it does come down to the animalistic instinct of the man and reproducing.
Yeah.
And the fact that man is just think sex, and they're quite visual. So they see a picture, I guess, and then they, as soon as you say that, they got straight away thinking more of their dicks.
Yeah.
And women don't. It's a bit more, could be more in the mind and a little bit more flowing like that. But yeah, it is, like you say, guys.
Yeah.
I'm not excusing them.
Yeah, I know. It's not all,
but that's
guys,
why it's,
you know,
more guys. That's what I'm saying.
It's not every single guy.
No, but it is majority,
isn't
it? I
accepted friend requests and had conversations with some interesting blokes, you know, who are artists and, like, whatever, and a couple of messages, and then that's it. And it's just discussing art or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the majority.
And that's what you want, though, isn't it? That's what you're hoping just for. Like, just like, oh,
be mates. That's what a friend request is. You're a friend that I don't know, you know, whatever. And chat, get to know you, bullshit. Not that I have time to sit and do that anyway.
Yeah.
I'm fucking always crocheting. But yeah, it's like, some of them are so belligerent. Really are. And I've not had, like, stalking level.
Mm.
But you can feel so harassed.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, I didn't give you permission for this.
Yeah.
Just by accepting a friend request. But it seemed to see that as, like, such a green light.
Yeah.
To kind of go, right, I'm just going to harass you so ridiculously. You know, what is the ultimate goal of that? Do you actually think you're going to wear me down so much? I'll go, oh, all right then. You know,
oh, right,
then,
come on, let's get into bed and have sex and start possibly attempt a relationship.
Yeah, is that what you want? You want that to be based on the fact that you just wore me down so much I had enough and agreed to it.
Wow.
You know?
And then imagine that then. Imagine you actually went, okay, let's have a relationship. And the relationship's based on you wearing me out.
Yeah, just,
and I'm exhausted.
So belligerent.
How was that relationship about to carry on? But I guess they're thinking as far as in the bedroom, aren't they?
They're just thinking a shag, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Or some pictures of your tits.
Yeah.
That's about as far as they're thinking, I think.
Yeah,
whereas,
totally.
See, the woman brain is going, you know, this would never work, blah-de-blah, fucking, whereas they're going, show us your tits.
Yeah.
If I keep griefing her up, she might give in.
It's a crazy, again, we're going into the mind again then, and just the craziness of it. And it's not even young people. You get people who still have not developed their instincts of how to attract another person in the correct manner.
Yeah.
And they just carry on going for years and years and years, and they're old men or women, and carry on that stuff. But you've never, like, being on Facebook, I imagine, I'm going to say, every woman that's listening to this now has probably had.
Yeah, definitely.
That.
I would say pretty much most women can relate to this.
I'll say maybe a very small percentage of the male listeners have had that.
Yeah,
we're
not saying this is men by all
means.
No, I'm sure there's some.
I haven't. Yeah, but I look, we can do it now. You've just told me, like, you've had I can't think really hugely off the top of my head of a particular woman that's messaged me in character on Messenger. No, not really.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that is kind of slightly more innocent because it's through a telephone line which you can unplug.
Yeah.
And turn the modem off if you have to get away from it. When it comes down to up close and personal,
that's it. That's fucking
looking through your window,
scary.
Find out where you live, come
that's
to your
so
fucking
scary.
House. Now then, that's where we get into proper stalking territory.
Yeah, definitely.
What movies are based on? What nightmares are based on?
Yeah, fucking Glenn Close, Boiling Your Bunny.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Fatal
Attraction. Good film.
Such a good film.
I prefer
such
Basic Instinct.
So you do. I don't. I prefer Fatal Attraction. That is such a good movie.
Oh, Sharon Stone's Beaver.
Yeah, but is that why you prefer?
No!
Because she gets a ham sandwich out.
No! Not at all. Not in the slightest.
Michael Douglas in that bloody jumper in the disco.
Yeah, it's like Jerry Dandridge.
Oh, yeah, Jerry
Fright
Dandridge
Night
did it
disco.
So much better, though.
He did.
He really did. Michael Douglas is just like, Eek in that. But Fatal Attraction, she's terrifying. Love her.
That's where it comes down to, the physicality of an actual stalking case and when that actually comes real. Mm. Now, today, lovely listeners, you, lovely host, have got some cases for us.
I have
some looking stalking cases.
I have, yeah. I'm going to talk a bit about like the definition of stalking, different types of stalking, and then we're going to get on to a few of the cases. Posted one of them on the Facebook page as well. Spent some time with Ricardo Lopez the other day in his pants, and then all of a sudden he was totally naked on the video, and I was like, oh my god, the things I do for you lovely listeners.
How long was that video?
Ricardo's
a couple hours.
Penis. Yeah, almost 2 hours.
Brilliant. And his man boobs.
Yeah, and his man boobs. Man boobs and tiny penis. Again, sorry, tiny penis. You had old man's cock on your other podcast. We've got tiny penis theme.
Oh, God. Don't start another penis themes podcast, please.
But we did watch a couple of things, didn't we, on YouTube?
Yeah.
I showed you that documentary that we watched with that Mike Reed's wife.
I'm happy to give this a slight explanation. As you're going to be doing all these cases, I can tell you listeners what this is.
We'll just say the documentary is on YouTube and it is called I'm Your Number One Fan. It was suggested by my lovely friend Amy. So you go ahead and give us a little breakdown of this woman.
Go on YouTube and check this lady out. This is a British woman. This documentary is, like, I'm guessing, late 80s.
Late 80s.
It looks it from the video footage. Mike Reed was just a DJ. He's just a nightclub DJ, a radio DJ.
Yeah.
Obviously,
Alan Partridge style.
People might not know that. Just someone who just talks and tells banter and plays music in the mornings or whatever. And this woman, fucking hell, you showed me.
She's
my mouth
bonkers.
My jaw opened wide and then my hand just went on my forehead, keeping my head up. I almost needed my other hand to keep my jaw shut. It's like, oh my god, this woman, she looks a bit like one of the Xenobites or whatever they're called. Hellraiser? Yeah, the one for the glasses. She is fucking loopy. I don't think I can give it justice.
I know, you have got to see it to believe it, really, because she is just amazing.
She is a woman who's so fanatical, because that's what it is, a super fanatical person about this thing that the video starts off with her in bed, and he comes on the radio, and she just goes around in the bedroom, and I was like, is she having an orgasm? What's she doing? And she's over the top, she goes to a t-shirt shop. And says, hello, I want this t-shirt in micro. Can you have this written on it? I want it in blue. And they're like, okay. And she obviously goes there regularly. And she says, I'm Mrs. Mike Reed. I'm married to him. Obviously, it's not. And he's like, okay, cool. So what do you want on the t-shirt? I want this. Will you go to bed with me, Mike Reed? And she's like, oh, but you're married to him, though, so you haven't slept with him yet? No. Isn't he gay? That's not on. Not on. I will not have that. He is not gay. That's really upset me. No.
She was crying, wasn't she, as well?
And then she's crying, and it's just like, oh, my God. And this is just in a fucking shop with a camera crew there. And this is in the 80s with a big fucking camera on your shoulder filming it.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, my God.
She was amazing.
She's the person that when you work in that t-shirt shop, when she comes, you see her coming and go, fucking going on my break.
Definitely.
Fuck that shit. I'm not doing
that. That lad at the back was pissing his pants at her. He was just turning around, wouldn't he? That'd be me. I'd be like,
But when she goes to the actual programme, she goes to the BBC, she goes to head offices, obviously can't get past security. She says, I can't come down here very often because I can't afford it. I thought she would be down there. She talks to like the people there, the showrunner, programmer, and a couple of other people. They come to see her and she's handing them stuff, you know, and then she's saying, I'm not a violent person, I haven't killed people or hurt people, I'm not a violent person. Why are you telling people you're not? I don't go around to the not a violent person. Is that because you fucking are? What, you know?
I
she almost makes me speechless.
It was just insane, so fucking
incredible.
She sent in a photo of her washing machine as well, didn't she? And that woman was reading through the mail.
It's the fan mail,
like,
yeah.
This is to prove I have a washing machine. I have called it Mike Reid.
She's insane.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, you've got to check it out because it just definitely, we can't do it justice. You have to see it to believe it.
It will make your mouth drool. So what is it called again?
I'm Your Number One Fan, and that's on YouTube. And thanks to Amy for pointing that one out to me. I did enjoy that.
That was insane.
I'll never forget that woman. Hilarious.
So are you about to do a first thing for us?
Yeah, we can go into that. So stalking. Stalking is defined as unwanted and or repeated surveillance by an individual or group towards another person. And just quickly, that was something I didn't go into, which I did intend to, but group gang stalking.
It's quite
an interesting subject to look into. I did mean to go into it on here, but I've got so many notes. I was just like, I can't do
okay,
anymore.
Okay, without interrupting you, because I know I'm terrible interrupting you, and I'm not going to today.
Yes.
Without interrupting you, but I am at this point here because I feel like I can. Gang stalking then. Is it particular gangs? Are we talking Bloods and Crips gangs?
This is what I thought it was until I looked into it. But it's gang stalking or targeted individuals.
A group of people targeting an individual.
Yeah, where a person will believe that they're being stalked, and it's usually by a group of people. Say, like, this one person will walk down the street and they might see five people out mowing their lawn. Then they will suspect all those people that are out mowing their lawn are working for, it's usually the government.
So it's not an actual stalking thing, it's an extreme paranoia.
And they'll be stalking those people for whatever reason. There's quite a good documentary on YouTube about that as well. I can't remember what it's called now.
Is it paranoid people then? Most of the time, then you get 5%.
Because there was we watched
video footage of that guy who said the police were following him, and he was filming out of his window, and there was legitimately, and at one point there was this thermal camera in a black van with a door opened up, this guy filming in this house to see if he's in the house.
Yeah.
And that was like, and then the guy turned up dead, didn't he? A few days later or whatever.
Yeah.
That's fucking weird.
It's stuff like that. You know, the person will believe that they're being spied on by an agency. So it could be the police, it could be the government, a department of the government. For whatever reason, you know, they'll probably believe as well that they've got implants. There's a guy in the documentary on YouTube, and they do take him to have an x-ray, and he has got implants in his skull where he said they were. He said he's got some stuff in the back of his teeth and right.
That's what you get with those people thinking like they've been taken up by aliens.
Yeah,
and they say,
yeah.
Oh, I've got nothing in it. And they occasionally once in a while go, yeah, there's some material inside the body, a foreign object, which we don't know what the material is.
Yeah. And that guy had implants in his skull. I think he had one up his nose.
But what was he saying was going on?
I can't remember exactly, but he was saying he was being stalked. I think it was by the government. So they will believe that if they go anywhere, there was like another woman, she continuously moved. She was living in like shipping containers, or she was buying a van and living in a van because she believed she was being stalked by the FBI.
That's insane.
It's crazy. I meant to go into it because I find it really fucking interesting because I've got massive conspiracy horn for that kind of shit. I'm really interested in that.
Yeah, conspiracy boner.
Yeah, definitely. Targeted individuals and gang stalking. It's really interesting.
Right, well, I'm glad you cleared up because I legitimately thought it was
street
gangs.
I did. When I first heard it, I was like...
It sounds like it would be, though.
Yeah.
But that's because you get things like gang banging.
Yeah.
You know. Okay.
So, yes, there you go. Little tangent. So that's gang stalking.
Okay.
The term stalker has been used since at least the 16th century to refer to a prowler or a poacher. The term was initially used by the media in the 20th century to describe people who pester and harass others, initially with specific reference to the harassment of celebrities by strangers who were described as being obsessed. With time, the meaning of stalking changed and incorporated individuals being harassed by their former partners. Stalking can be defined as the willful and repeated following, watching, or harassing of another person. And while some of the actions involved in stalking may not be illegal, like just sending a message, you know, if it it becomes illegal when it's frequently repeated to an unwilling recipient.
Like we were saying,
so
then, yeah.
Yeah, if it's just getting too much. The UK law states the action only needs to be repeated twice when the harasser should be aware their behaviour is unacceptable. Stalking can include phone calls, texts, emails and sending gifts. And stalkers may use overt or covert intimidation, threats and violence to frighten their victims. They may engage in vandalism and property damage or make physical attacks that are meant to frighten.
Okay.
So that's definition of stalking.
It's quite... there's another bit we were discussing where it's actually quite a sad and lonely person, probably, quite a lot of times, who is deprived of comfort when they're younger.
Yeah.
And then they get someone in their head or something, and then that person...
just becomes an obsession.
Yeah. And they're just wanting to have cuddles or sex or just... a personal feeling, touch, mentally or physically, or both, with this person they've got in their head. Because especially, which takes me on to the next point, celebrities, like you said, it starts with celebrities. That seems like the way it would have started, because you've got early on, if you're going early on, it would have... What celebrities back in the day of the time you're saying this? Is it going to be theatre people? Do you know what I mean? It's like whatever you had. But for nowadays and stuff, yeah... the people in the limelight. But I guess if you're going to be doing something which is going to be in the pop culture, either film, music or something like that, and you're going to be a celebrity, you're going to be in that limelight, in that eye of everybody.
Yeah.
It kind of comes with the ticket of admission, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
But you can imagine celebrities being a big one in stalking, because people just get obsessed, like we are getting with Bjork later on. But you can see how that naturally goes. And it's an interesting note. Someone like that who goes to stalk a celebrity, they are seeing this person and hearing about them and thinking that they know their life. Like the Mike Reed one. Yeah, no, she's not. He's not gay. He's not got a girlfriend. I'm his girlfriend.
Yeah.
They're denying all that stuff. But we do get an insight into the lives of these celebrities more than the person who's stalking your average Jane.
Yeah.
And they're just somehow had some... All these cases, you're going to tell us, have the, apart from the Bjork and celebrity one, the ones which are not celebrities, have the stalkers themselves had a personal relationship of any description with the person they're going to stalk beforehand?
No.
So how are they doing that? Are they literally walking along the street and going...
Oh, no, one of them worked with... one of them. They've not had like an intimate relationship.
No. I just mean of any connection whatsoever.
Right,
yes.
Okay. I miss
any sort of form of
one guy works.
Even a work, you know.
Yeah. One guy works with one woman.
So that's where that guy came from.
The woman was his teacher.
Right.
I'm just trying to think of the other one. I can't bring it to mind now.
Well, we're sorry.
Yeah, we'll see.
It.
So there
I was
has
just
been
interested,
some
though,
kind of connection.
Because that is the two. It's the celebrity and the non-celebrity. Mm. And stalking those two types. And the non-celebrity, not being in the limelight, you're going to have some sort of personal relationship. Or it's a point where you just become so fascinated with a person.
Yeah.
Well, and I, as a younger, would have fancied someone and been like, oh, I really like her for a little while. Then it kind of you go off and you carry on your life and you forget
limits,
it and you go,
it? You know. And I think as well as that kind of need for attention, you know, a lot of it also has to do with power, you know, and the control
that they have
over the victim's life. You know, they're taking over their life. It's not just taking over the stalker's life. It takes over the victim's life as well, you know, so that gives the stalker so much more control.
That is it, because...
You know, you're controlling where they go. Are they going to go to a certain place because they think you're going to be there, you know?
So
you
they
know
can't go there now because you might be there, so you're in power of them.
That you're frightened at home, you know?
Yeah.
They know that they're doing that to you. So I think a lot of it is power as well.
Because the person that stalked the victim, they are, in fact, a victim for life, because it can screw you right up. It's going to
be fucking terrifying.
It's scare
if some
you
of this shit happened
even,
to me, Jesus Christ.
Even if the people are busted or arrested, you're still like, this could happen again.
Yeah, totally.
Even if you're not a celebrity.
Yeah, well, that's why I've kind of only done one celebrity case, because I thought... I don't want to say it's obvious, you know, but it is. It's kind of obvious, like you were saying, that celebrities will get stalked. You know, you're going to be in the limelight. So I've kind of gone for... I've done Bjork and her stalker because, obviously, that's a really interesting case. There's lots of stuff out there. Like, I've watched the...
It's crazy looking.
I watched nearly 2 hours of him on YouTube the other day, you know. So there's stuff out there that you can watch on that one, and it's really interesting. But the other ones, I've gone for kind of, like, just... civilian stalkers,
yeah,
you know, just the normal everyday people like us. This shit could happen to us.
It's ooh. Stalking in general is just a crazy thing, isn't it?
It's really? Fucking it is. It's so scary as well, so frightening.
And obviously, these people may be slightly mentally.
Of course, it's mental illness you've got to consider as well. Wrong. Obviously, like I think Bjork stalker,
but then you're going to get him, then you get say like the Golden State Killer. Yeah. You're going to get the people. Just don't give a fuck.
Yeah, definitely.
No empathy. You know, that's I don't give a shit.
That's where the power comes in.
Yeah.
You know, does not care.
And then that probably goes back to childhood again and having having no attention upon them.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't give a shit about you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how to live, is it?
Yeah. So.
And that comes down to being a bit sad again. Aww. So it's just... It's just a fascinating case, and you can just say stalker off your top of your head and be like, that's it, that's the subject stalker.
Yeah.
No, it's so more complex.
Mm, definitely.
Do you want to go through your first?
Well, I've still got some other bits and bobs here to go through. I've got types of victims here. So prior intimates, victims who had been in a previous relationship with their stalker, which is the largest category. These victims are more likely to be exposed to violence from their stalker, especially if the stalker has a criminal past. Casual acquaintances and friends among male stalking victims, most are part of this category. Professional contacts, victims who have been stalked by patients, clients or students who they've had a professional relationship with. Certain professions such as healthcare providers, teachers and lawyers are at higher risk for stalking.
Oh, fucking hell, yeah.
Yeah. Like Cape Fear.
Yeah, and that's an incredible film.
Yeah. Oh, that's so
amazing. But how scary is De Niro?
I showed that to Ben a couple of weeks
ago. That's your daughter, isn't
it? Yeah, my daughter, and she was like, it's all right. I was like, it's an absolute masterpiece, just all of it. You know, it's so good, the way it's filmed, the way, acting.
You seen the original?
Oh, don't kick me under the table, no, I haven't. I love that one so much, though, that remake.
It's a very good film.
If it's going to match up.
No.
Which is a bit shitty of me. I feel bad.
Doesn't matter. Carry on.
De Niro's awesome in that film.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Workplace contacts. The stalkers of these victims tend to visit them in their workplace, which means that they're either an employer, employee, or a client. And victims of strangers are typically unaware of how their stalkers began stalking, as they form a sense of admiration for their victims from a distance. So, and the famous, most of the victims are celebrities in the media, but may also be politicians and athletes.
Okay.
A report from the US Department of Justice reports that 43% of male victims stated the offender was female. So that's female stalkers.
Like we said. Yeah.
41% stated it was another male. 67% of female victims stated their stalker was male, as opposed to 24% which said their stalker was also female. Psychologists often group individuals who stalk into two categories, psychotic and non-psychotic. And some stalkers may have pre-existing psychotic disorders, such as delusional disorder, schizoaffective disorder, or schizophrenia. However, most stalkers are non-psychotic and may exhibit disorders or neuroses, such as major depression, adjustment disorder, or substance dependence, as well as a variety of personal disorders, such as antisocial, borderline, or narcissistic. Non-psychotic stalkers' pursuit of victims is primarily angry, vindictive, often including a projection of blame, obsession, dependency, denial, and jealousy. Scary stuff. A study of stalkers identified five types. So, rejected stalkers follow their victims in order to reverse, correct, or avenge a rejection. Resentful stalkers make a vendetta because of a sense of grievance against the victim, motivated mainly by the desire to frighten and distress the victim. Intimacy seekers seek to establish an intimate relationship with the victim, often believing they are meant to be together. Incompetent suitors, despite poor social or courting skills, have a fixation, or in some cases, a sense of entitlement to an intimate relationship with those who have attracted their interest.
Wow.
Their victims are usually already in a relationship with someone else.
Yeah.
And predatory stalkers spy on the victim in order to prepare or plan an attack, which is often sexual in nature. Yeah. So go. That sounds like a right old fucking bag, doesn't it? Jesus.
The second to last, I know, saying that someone's already got a relationship. That's the type on the old Facebook, your Twitter, your Instagram, whatever, who even you say, even it says status with someone.
I know.
They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Because your status obviously says you're with me.
Yeah, and it says I'm with you.
Yeah. But they don't. But like, it's like, oh, I'm going to leave him.
What gets me, though, is that they'll go on your profile. They'll start liking your profile pictures if it's a picture of your face. I've had this quite a bit. And then they'll message and start like chatting up or whatever, you know. Mm. And it's like, you went on my page, you had the time to go through my pictures and like them, but you didn't have the time to check my status then and see that I was in a relationship.
Or notice that quite a few of your pictures, you stand next to a
particular
person.
Yeah, there's pictures of me and you in there. You know, we always put pictures up when we go out. It's insane, you know. You like, you've just been through them and you've not
and
even
not noticed that
look,
or clocked that,
you know,
that's
so
a thing.
So fucking rude.
Yeah.
Annoying. But there you go.
But yeah, so that's like five different cases of types of stalkers.
That's the types of stalkers, yeah, that they've managed to identify. And they all sound fucking terrifying, don't they?
Yeah.
God.
What's the first case you're going to do for us?
So I'm going to talk about Randy Barber and Gary Delapenta.
Like I said earlier, probably not the hairdressers you want to go to.
Or could be the hairdresser you want to go to.
The Randy Barber.
Yeah, you might want to go there.
Okay, who's the stalker? Who's a stalkee?
So the victim is Randy Barber and the stalker is Gary Delapenta. So in 1998, 28-year-old Randy Barber from North Hollywood, California, she started getting frightening phone calls and messages on her answering machine from like several different men. One April day, this escalated when a stranger knocked on her apartment door. He left after she silently hid, but phoned her apartment later. When she asked him what he wanted, he seemed surprised because she sounded like hysterical. The man explained that he was responding to her advert that she had placed on the internet.
Had she?
No, she hadn't. She was like, what the fuck is this?
It's an excuse to...
No, that's what he did.
That was his MO?
No. That guy and the phone calls on, you'll find out as we go through the story, but she didn't put that advert up, but he is responding to an advert. She asked what the ad was and what did it say, and the caller said, let me put it this way, you could get raped.
What? What sort of advert would have been for that? Oh my god.
I think you might have a few of those moments through this one, actually.
Fucking
it's
hell.
A bit like, fucking hell. But it's like, it's just insane, you know, for a woman to get told that from a stranger.
Yeah.
And he's already been to her house, so it's like, right, dude said that, and he knows where I live. What the fuck? Over the next few months, she would discover that her stalker... that a stalker had assumed her identity and was not only posting ads on the internet claiming she had rape and gangbang fantasies, but was also giving out her address, directions to her home, details of her social plans, and even advice on how to short-circuit her alarm system. Within days of receiving the first phone call, she went to the police and filed a report, but they said they couldn't help her, so she started working the case herself. Her dad gets involved as well. She kept the tape phone messages and called the men back to explain the situation, and two of the men cooperated with her request for help in tracing the culprit, sending her hard copies of emails that had been exchanged between the apparent her of the advert and them. Her dad managed to trace the ads and was soon corresponding with the usernames PlayfulKitty4U and KinkyGal30. By August, Randy and her dad had gathered plenty of evidence and also had a suspect in mind. She'd met Gary Delapenta, a security guard, through a friend. Twice divorced, Delapenta lived in a bungalow with his 80-year-old mother. When he started making advances to her, she rebuffed him as he made her feel uncomfortable. Undeterred, he sent flowers and gifts, continued to call, and even joined her church. After the church elders intervened, the unwanted advances stopped, but months later, the phone calls began. Randy and her father handed the emails over to the police, along with Delapenta's name, and they began to work on the case in earnest. FBI agents traced the emails from the websites where the ads were posted, and they verified that they'd been sent from Delapenta's computer after studying his hard drive. Delapenta was arrested on charges of cyberstalking and sentenced to 6 years in prison. I think he was one of the first people to be charged with cyberstalking, cybercrime.
Right, okay.
So it was 98, so still kind of like...
So... he made fake profiles saying he was this lady contacting other dudes.
Yeah.
And these other dudes
saying
are like,
she
hey,
wanted to be raped.
Nice.
She had gangbang fantasies and stuff.
No, it's quite bad.
And he was giving out advice on how to short circuit her alarm and stuff and directions to her house.
But under her own profile, she was saying, come here and you can can short circuit my alarm because I want the fantasy of being raped, so I'll be in bed. So he's basically trying to get people to go there and rape her, thinking that they're doing it as a kink, a sexual kink, where it's an innocent sexual kink, even if the fantasy is harder than that.
Consenting adults, then that's fine. But
so that's what he's trying to do. So she
knows nothing about it.
That is so...
that's dark, isn't it?
Because think about that. That could then happen. And the guy who's doing it is thinking that she's loving this.
Yeah.
And then leaves. Then finds it. Then the police come in his house and say, we've done a DNA test. Remember, you were the rapist. You broke in the house. Yeah, but that's what she wanted.
Yeah.
That's fucked.
It's crazy, isn't it?
That's some dark, dark fucking sitting in your room by yourself in some dark, dark thoughts to come up with, giving that much evil and hatred to someone else. And generally, it's going to be because that person themselves obviously are quite a horrible person, but that, is it because they want the hatred on them? They push it onto someone else, or they've had the hatred to them? And
So... there's obviously something wrong with him. He's been divorced twice, and he's still living at home with his 80-year-old mum.
But the police wouldn't do anything about it until they've actually done.
They won't do anything until something's actually.
And then
happened.
They said in earnest. In earnest means what? They sort of do it as in like in kind.
Got on the bloody case with it. No, they started fucking shifting their arms.
Just because these two people have been like, and the dad's going, yeah, I'll help you do this, daughter, because I don't want this stalker anywhere near you. Let's figure out who it is. And they fucking figure it out themselves.
Yeah.
But this guy, so how did it end? Apologise? He never actually did.
He got 6 years.
But he never actually got to her.
Yeah, got 6 years in prison.
But she was never.
No, nothing actually ever physically to her because attacked and stuff. She was phoning the guys back saying, like, this is what's happening. I didn't put the advert up.
So even though there's no physical connection, anything like that, he got 6 years.
Yeah. Well, that's fucking bad. That's like initiating a fucking crime, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not saying that he should have got less.
Yeah,
I'm quite
he should have got more.
I'm just interested by that because then you do hear of certain cases of things going on in the world. This is America, yeah? So it's American justice system. And you do hear in the American justice system where people are going down for harder crimes, less time.
Yeah.
So I was interested by them 6 years, but they must have looked at him and his profile and been like, this dude is going to basically go ahead and do something bad.
Hmm.
So we're putting him in 6 years, he'll probably do three.
Yeah.
And what, they're hoping when he comes out, he won't do this? Is he out?
I don't know, I'm assuming so.
Hmm. Okay, he's probably got a new identity or something maybe.
Yeah.
that's okay. So that's a, I was going to say, a fairly innocent stalking case.
Yeah,
it isn't, but
not,
compared to what you're going to be telling us,
yeah,
I suppose it comes down to lower,
more condensed, I suppose. But yeah, like, it's dark. That's fucking horrible to think that someone planning a rape, you know, want you to get raped. That's fucking disgusting.
I just think that whole
so terrible
side of getting totally innocent people,
yeah,
involved,
yeah,
and potentially ruining their lives completely.
Yeah, definitely
ruin every aspect of their lives.
Yeah, crazy. Right, ready for number two?
I don't know. Yeah, okay.
Okay. So this is the case of Ming Sen Xu and Mary Stauffer.
I've got a friend called Ming.
Have you? Is it Ming the Merciless?
No.
Oh, that would have been well good. Ming was born on October the 15th, 1950, in Taiwan. In its teen years, Xu was reportedly engaged in criminal activity such as starting fires in the apartments of three strangers and throwing rocks at vehicles. He was ordered to participate in psychotherapy at the age of 14. According to his mother, Xu often lied, was uncontrollable as a child, and took no responsibility for his physical behaviour, which caused her to be fearful. From 1965 to 1966, Xu attended Alexander Ramsey High School in Roseville, where he came to have a crush on his ninth grade algebra teacher, Mary Stauffer. He later admitted, during proceedings, that due to his infatuation, Xu began sexually fantasising about the teacher. He later wrote stories about his fantasies with fictional characters and eventually about Stauffer, which included consensual sex, rape and gang rape. In later years, after he realised that he didn't find complete satisfaction from his fantasies, he decided to kidnap Stauffer. In 1975, Xu located what he erroneously believed to be Stauffer's residence in Duluth. He broke into the house with a firearm, intending to kidnap the victim, who did not live at the residence. Her in-laws owned the house. They were forced to the ground, tied up, and threatened to be killed if they reported the crime. Because of this, the home invasion was not reported until the actual kidnapping of Stauffer took place 5 years later. As Xu continued his search for Stauffer during the intervening period, Stauffer lived with family in the Philippines, where she and her husband worked as Christian missionaries. They returned to Minnesota in 1979. A year later, Xu learned that Stauffer lived at the Bethel University campus, and he began to stalk her. His stalking continued until May the 16th, 1980, when Xu tracked Stauffer down at a beauty salon in Roseville. When Stauffer left the salon, he kidnapped her and her 8-year-old daughter, Elizabeth, at gunpoint. He tied them up and threw them into the trunk of Stauffer's car. During the trip to his house, where he intended to keep them hostage, he stopped the vehicle twice because Mary and Elizabeth were making noises. When he stopped for the second time, a 6-year-old boy, Jason Wilkman, approached the vehicle to see what was happening. Xu grabbed him and forced him into the trunk. He then drove to the isolated Carlos Avery Wildlife Refuge in Anoka County. Not going to cry at this bit. Removed the boy from the trunk and beat him to death with a metal rod. Oh.
Okay, so I breathe. Okay.
He then drove Mary and Elizabeth to his house and locked them in a closet. Later, he took Mary out of the closet and tied her to the furniture. Xu talked to her for hours, disclosing who he was, before he repeatedly raped her. He recorded the rapes and conversations on his video camera. When Xu told Stauffer he was her student 15 years prior and told her she had given him a B+ grade in algebra, which prevented him from going to college, he said as a result he was drafted into the Vietnam War and became a prisoner of war. This was the same as many of his claims, not true. While they were kept at his house, Mary and Elizabeth were often separated by Xu. He put Elizabeth, that's a little girl, in a box in his van for 8 hours while he was at work and her mother was left locked in a closet in the house. This guy's so fucked up. Mm. He also told Mary he would kill her husband and son if they ever tried to escape. On July the 7th, 1980, after Shu left for work, Mary managed to remove the hinge pin from the locked closet door, and despite being chained to her daughter, Mary and Elizabeth were able to reach the phone in the kitchen and call the police. After making the call, they hid behind a car at Shu's residence until the police arrived. Both were immediately freed after several weeks of imprisonment. Shu was arrested at his business the same day. He was taken to Ramsey County Adult Detention Centre. While in jail, he offered $50,000 to another inmate, Richard Green, to kill Stauffer and her daughter to prevent them from testifying against him in court and to help him escape from jail. Green gave the information to the FBI. Shu underwent two trials. The first trial took place in 1980 and concerned the abduction of Mary and Elizabeth and the rape of Mary. Excuse me. He was found guilty and sentenced to 30 years in jail. His second trial began in 1981. During the trial, Shu smuggled a knife into the courtroom, and when Stauffer testified, he jumped over the table and attacked her, cutting her face severely, and she needed 62 stitches. When the second trial ended, Shu was sentenced to 40 years for the murder charge to be served concurrently with his previous 30-year sentence. He was later declared eligible for parole on July the 6th, 2010, but on September 28th, 2010, the Anoka County District Judge ruled Shu would not be released and would spend the rest of his life in prison.
Good fucker.
Yeah, he's a cunt, isn't he?
Oh my god.
Did a little moment there.
I know you did.
I was trying not to. I knew what was coming. I was like, oh no, no.
Well, I have a 6-year-old son.
Yeah.
I was going to say, how brave was that boy?
Yeah, because my son's 17. He would not go over to a car to see what was happening. He's huge. He's bigger than me. And he would not.
My 6-year-old wouldn't. I don't think.
Yeah.
Go over. I think he'd, if I was there, he'd find me and say something's going on.
Yeah, but you've got to think of the age. This is like 70s, 80s, you know, when we were going riding in a car without seat belts, fucking drink driving.
So when this all happened, this dude was a student to this teacher. What was he, 14, 15?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got this fascinating.
It started then and just continued, and that's what I was thinking as I was going
through
the
information. And then another 15 years later,
yeah, it, goes
it
on
still
for
continued.
So
he had no relationship in between then or anything like that,
no.
Anything in his personal life?
No, not that I know of.
Why is it always gang rape? He had fascinations of gang rape. The other one was fascinations about gang rape.
Yeah, I think.
Is that the most degrading thing they think in their head that
maybe,
can be upon that person?
And it's like a mass of male power, isn't it, as well? Maybe it's something to do with that. It's the amount of male energy kind of overpowering that woman.
And the fact that he said he's like in he was in the Vietnam War and stuff, and you ruined it for me, because then I was fucking, because of your miseducation, Vietnam War, I was in prison. Is he trying to make it fine for himself?
Yeah.
That he can do it?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. But yeah, it's bullshit. It's just
that's
bullshit.
Absolutely insane.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. So he took the 6-year-old, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's all right.
He took the 6-year-old and somewhere then beat this kid, just pulled a kid out and beat him to death.
Yeah.
Was he done for that murder on the second trial?
There wasn't mention of it.
Because you didn't mention it for the first or second.
Yeah,
so,
no, I would hope that. I thought possibly
the second trial maybe before the murder. And so how old was the daughter when he kidnapped?
Eight.
So his 8-year-old had to sort of go for that.
Yeah.
And like we said, it's not like now that 8-year-old has to live with that fear.
Yeah, because
forever.
Like, she's
and
been
if
kept
that's
in 8-year-box. Old,
yeah, if 8-year-old becomes a mother, the fear,
yeah,
pushed onto their children, and their children, oh, my mum's so overprotected, blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
It just fucks up the whole world.
Yeah,
you know, because of this one guy, is so obsessed since a kid when he had a bone all the time, wanted to wank all the time as a teenager over his teacher.
Yeah.
And you do this. I'm sure I've had teachers, I've been like, oh, she's all right, when you're like, you know, a kid.
We didn't have any.
Yeah.
none at my school where I was like, oh, they're not bad.
Well, I don't imagine you would really. It's more of a male to female teacher. Thing. Again, back to that. It's back to the male and the way they are.
Yeah.
Which ends up being a lot of criminal activity in the world. Isn't it, really?
Yeah. Little head causes big problems.
Indeed. Wow.
Mm. Yeah, it was pretty crazy, isn't it?
Then to go and say to someone, which is obviously bullshit because he probably hasn't got 50 grand. Oh, yeah, I'll pay 50 grand if you kill her. Yeah, have you got 50 grand, have you? Wow. I'm glad the judge went, no, you're not coming out.
Yeah, me too. Fucking.
Why didn't the first judge just be like, nah, you're never coming out. You've got issues.
Something going wrong inside.
Did you at all look into his backstory a little bit of like his upbringing?
Yeah, I gave it a bit, didn't I?
Yeah, but what was his mum and dad? Anything on that or how they were with him or anything?
No, I just said he was uncontrollable from the time he was a child.
Mm.
And setting fire to people's houses and fucking throwing rocks at cars.
So, and then if he'd had the old head injury, might have been the old serial killer type.
Mm.
But then again, with D'Angelo, the Golden State Killer, we deciphered that he didn't have a head trauma and still ended up being a fucking serial killer. It's weird how the mind can just fucking go there.
Yeah.
Okay. God, this is just going downhill and hill, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're going to go a bit more further down the hill with Ricardo Lopez and Bjork.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this one you can see some footage, and we're going to play a little sample clip of this dude at the end after Sarah's given us a lovely description of the events. But this guy, from my seeing of him and my small knowledge of this dude, he's just a scary guy who was taking advantage of video cameras and filming messages to, I'm presuming, post to Bjork, videotapes sort of thing. This guy's just, the fact that what ends up happening, I won't say now.
Yeah.
With the video camera and what he films towards the end is just like, whoa.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So he does some kamikaze shit, basically.
And I spent those almost couple of hours watching him on YouTube while I was crocheting away, and it's quite weird. Not really to see the kind of descent into madness that you would expect. I would have expected it to be a lot more severe. He's already quite, like, I don't know, he's quite an odd person, you know, and for his family to kind of say, well, we never really saw anything necessarily wrong with him, you know, unless he doesn't show that outwardly, maybe, to his family, and does feel comfortable showing that side to the videotape. Excuse me.
It's almost quite a persona.
Yeah, you could easily see that he had some issues.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's out there. If you want to watch it, it is out there. The videos of him. It's video diary.
It's towards the end, the last video, where he's shaved all his hair off, he's painted his face red, he's sitting naked, he's kind of got that Marlon Brando from Apocalypse Now thing going on.
Yeah, and like when he cuts his hair real short, he does it on the video, but he doesn't do it how you would have expected he would, don't like normally we would do it with shavers, you know, he sits there and he does it with a pair of scissors, so he's doing it a bit at a time.
It's taking so long.
Yeah, it takes ages, and he's kind of sitting there with half his head done, you know, and looks like he looks really unhinged and really weird. So yeah, it's kind of like, it is a weird watch, but it's not too traumatic, so it's out there if you want to do a look at it.
Alright, go on then.
Okay, so Ricardo Lopez was born on January the 14th, 1975,
2 days after me.
So
77,
in Uruguay, into a middle class family. He moved to the States and settled in Georgia. Lopez's family described him as easygoing but introverted, and he had a few male friends, but none with no women friendships, no female friendships, no girlfriends, because he had feelings of inadequacy and was awkward around girls. He had aspirations to become a famous artist and dropped out of high school. However, he didn't seriously pursue an artistic career due to his feelings of inferiority and fear of being rejected on applying to art school. He intermittently worked for his brother's pest control business to support himself, but by the age of 17, Lopez had become socially reclusive and, as a means of escape, retreated into a world of fantasies and became obsessed with celebrities. In 1993, Lopez became fixated with Björk, and for those who don't know, that is an Icelandic singer and music lady. Because I said to Ren, do you know who Björk is? Because she got my daughter, and she came in while I was watching Ricardo. I said to her, do you know who Björk is? Just like offhand, thinking she would do, and she was like, no. I was like, oh shit.
I've got the best of her double album on record, actually. Yeah. And occasionally I will, when I'm out, I might, or mixtape, put on a Björk, because some of her tracks and production is fucking amazing. Yeah. Some of her songs are so good.
They are.
And the video, she's a complete artist.
Yeah, she is really cool.
And some of her pop stuff isn't the pop cheesy. She does decent stuff.
No, I can appreciate her music, absolutely, but it's not what I would choose to listen to the majority of the time. I do think she's very, very good at what she does.
No, it makes me think I need to listen to some Björk again, actually.
I said to Ren about it, and she was like, no. But then I showed her a picture, and she's like, oh, yeah, I do know her.
Yeah.
Like, oh, cool, that's all right then. So she was an Icelandic singer and music producer.
She was behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, she did loads of stuff, didn't she? So, he became fixated with her in 93 and began gathering information about her life. He followed her career and wrote her numerous fan letters. Initially, Lopez said that she was his artistic muse and that his infatuation...
What was his art?
I couldn't find any evidence of his art, to be honest.
I'm a filmmaker, and
I think he's just giving it the fucking guff, isn't he? Just giving it the guff, but not really coming out with anything. Just going, oh, I'm an artist, but I've got no.
Yeah, because I've got someone I've worked with before, and someone said to me, "Oh, that's like your muse."
Oh my god!
Yeah.
It just reminds me of Sightseers. It's like, I'm your muse. Look at me musing.
That's you to me.
Oh, 100%. That's me and you. Definitely. She even got a crocheted crotchless bra and knickers.
You don't
she?
Know.
It's fucking amazing.
You don't have that.
I don't, but I could easily.
Oh my god. Carry on.
Okay. His infatuation gave him a euphoric feeling, but as time passed, his fixation about Björk became all consuming and he grew more disconnected from reality. In his diary, Lopez wrote of longing to be accepted by Björk and to be a person that had an effect on her life. He fantasised about inventing a time machine that would enable him to time travel to the 70s and become friends with her as a child. His fantasies weren't sexual, though. He wrote, "I could never have sex with Björk because I love her." And he also says in the video that he couldn't do it because he's fat, he's got a tiny penis, and he's got no stamina.
Bigging himself up there?
Yeah, I know. So you can tell he's proper down.
Here's a catch, ladies.
Himself.
Here you go. I can't have sex with you for very long, and you're not going to get much pleasure.
And he does appear naked, totally naked, in one of the videos. A couple of the videos. He was just in his pants for a while. And I was like, okay, it's bearable. And then he walks out with no clothes on. It's like, shit. That's just crazy. But he wasn't like, you know, yeah, his penis is tiny, but like, it's not. He's just overweight. It's not like a massive drama.
Well, I was going to go back to the fact that I was going to go back to the fact that small penis syndrome again.
Mm.
It's feeling inadequacy.
Yeah, definitely.
And not having a relationship with him and stuff. At the beginning when he started saying it, I was like, this kind of sounds like me when I was younger.
So I think it sounds like a lot.
I've always been very quite friendly with females.
Yeah.
I didn't develop into the sexual age until a lot later in my life. I was too fascinated with skateboarding and stuff. But along that time, though, I did have a lot of female buddies. I've always got along with the female.
Yeah.
And my feminine side sort of thing. But he just didn't have that. And in this inadequacy that the whole time just... I wonder if, like, you know, you do get, when he's younger, like someone else in the shower go, oh, look, you got a small willy, and from just that one moment.
Yeah, and I think because he had the boob thing going on as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, doesn't look terrible. I will get to that in a bit. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but he had that thing where, like, the male breast tissue increases. Mm. It's a condition.
Yeah.
You know, so he had that going on.
Mm.
But it doesn't look terrible. He just looks like he's a bit overweight and he's got kind of boobs. You know, it's not like dramatic.
Yeah, but obviously then that him himself
with the small penis. It's the
mentality of that as well. If you look at it, if that was me, I would look at it and be like, okay, that's cool, but that's the way I am.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna get over that, and I'll find someone who likes me for who I am.
Yeah.
As a person. And then that stuff comes with it because it just comes with a package.
Yeah.
But if you can't think that or seem to think that that could be or have a positive end of a rainbow in the future to yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
You're going to go down
these
dark places, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose that.
I guess if you can't think positive or think
normality with other things.
And it's just life. Let's just carry on. We've got to just carry on. You're given what you've got. Just fucking carry on.
Mm.
You just make it as you can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so Lopez's diary that he was writing grew to 803 pages, with writing including his thoughts on Bjork as well as his feelings of inadequacy due to being overweight, his disgust and embarrassment over suffering from gynecomastia, that was the thing I was talking about, which is a disorder of the endocrine system, which increases the amount of male breast tissue, and his inability to get a girlfriend. He wrote that he considered himself a loser who never even learned to drive. The diary contained 168 references to Lopez's feelings of failure, 34 references to suicide, and 14 references to murder. He made 408 references to Bjork and 52 references to other celebrities. In 1996, Lopez was living alone in an apartment in Hollywood, Florida. Around this time, he read a magazine stating that Bjork was in a relationship with Goldie, the musician. Lopez was angered by this perceived betrayal and the fact she was with a black man, writing in his diary, "I wasted 8 months and she has a fucking lover." He began fantasizing about how he could punish Bjork. Lopez stopped writing in his diary and instead started recording a video diary in his apartment. He recorded 11 tapes that contained approximately 2 hours of footage each. The tapes contained footage of Lopez planning his revenge over Bjork's relationship with Goldie, testing the bombs he was planning to send to her. In one entry he states, "I'm just going to have to kill her. I'm going to send her a package. I'm going to send her to hell."
This guy's unhinged.
Yeah, it's crazy. You can see in the video that I watched, he was testing some of the bombs and stuff and going, "Oh, how tall is she?" Kind of like measuring how tall she was.
How
like
much thinking, effect from the bomb when opening the package.
Yeah. Lopez initially intended to construct a bomb filled with hypodermic needles containing HIV-infected blood, but he realises that he kind of just...
Where'd you get that from?
Yeah, that's what he was saying on the video. He's like, "I can't get that, so I'm just not going to do that." So he began constructing a letter bomb using sulfuric acid in a hollowed out book, which he planned to have sent to her home in London. The device was designed to kill or disfigure Bjork as she opened the book. He would commit suicide after mailing the bomb, hoping that in the event that the bomb killed Bjork, the two would be united in heaven. On the morning of September the 12th, 1996, Lopez began filming his final video entry, titled "Last Day, Ricardo Lopez." It begins with Lopez preparing to mail the letter bomb. He states that he's very nervous, but that if he aroused suspicion, he would rather kill himself than be arrested. After returning from the post office, he resumes filming. As Bjork's music plays in the background, Lopez, totally nude, cuts all his hair off and paints his face and red and green, and I've got that, and boobs, because they missed that out. He paints his boobs red as well. He looks at himself in the mirror and tells the camera he's a little nervous, but he knows exactly what he's doing. He also appears to be nervous about going through with his plan due to the building super being downstairs. Puts it off for ages because that guy's downstairs. I'm like, what difference would it make? Maybe because if it goes wrong, he doesn't want to be saved if the guy hears a gunshot. As Bjork's song "I Remember You" finishes playing, Lopez shouts, "This is for you." like The Omen. This is for you, Damien.
Yeah.
And puts a 38 caliber revolver in his mouth and pulls the trigger. Lopez's body falls out of sight, and a hand-painted sign saying "The best of me" is propped behind him, and police reckon that he intended to cover that with blood and brain with the gunshot. Shortly after, the camera stops recording. On September 16th, a foul odour and blood were noticed coming from Lopez's apartment. The Hollywood police entered, and Lopez's decomposing corpse was discovered inside. Written on the wall was a message reading, "The 8mm videos are documentation of a crime, terrorist matter. They are for the FBI. The Broward County Sheriff's Department evacuated the building, while bomb squad searched for further explosives, though the device Lopez sent was the only one constructed. After viewing Lopez's final tape, police contacted Scotland Yard to warn them that the potentially explosive package was on its way to Bjork's residence in London. The Metropolitan Police intercepted the package at a South London post office, and it was safely detonated. There had been little danger of the bomb making it to Bjork anyway, as all her mail was vetted by her management. She sent a card and flowers to Lopez's family, saying she was very distressed by the incident, and a year after his death, she discussed it in an interview, saying, "I was very upset that somebody had died. I couldn't sleep for a week, and I'd be lying if I said that it didn't scare the fuck out of me." Lopez's friends and family were aware of his obsession with her. They maintained they had no idea that he harboured violent thoughts or was capable of violence. At one point, Lopez's brother had told him, "Get a real woman, you're obsessed." A psychiatrist who treated Lopez for anxiety shortly before his death also stated that Lopez did not appear dangerous.
That's fascinating.
Isn't that crazy?
But the loved ones, people you're in close contact with, your day-to-day businesses, do not recognise that you...
Living two totally different lives. You know, even the psychiatrist is saying, he didn't seem dangerous. But if you watch those videos, you know, if you saw that, you would think he's a dangerous person.
The fact that he's at this point says, though, "I'm nervous."
Hmm.
So, euphoric feeling. What a feeling of ecstasy, a feeling of nirvana,
really happy kind of.
And that's what music's supposed to do in a sense. The time machine thing, that doesn't seem that kind of weird. I know you sort of said it and going, I don't think that's quite weird. If you know, I said to you even last night, we should have been little and watched horror movies together. Or, do you know what I mean? That thing, it's almost sweet looking at it. That if you take out everything else and you look at it innocently, time machine, so we could have met each other when we were younger. That's not.
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't think that's that bad. The sending the bomb and then going right, fucking shoot myself. What if there'd been what if anything had happened? Like the postal truck had an accident and all the postal stuff got to. Why did he not wait to find out if she actually got hurt?
Yeah.
I know you said he had the fear of being arrested, but if he has the gun next to him, at any point the police start to go down the thing, you put the gun in your mouth. Yeah. What are they going to do? Hold the guns at you and say, "Put the gun down or we'll shoot you." Well, that's what I want anyway. So I find it funny that he would not wait and just go fucking straight for it.
Yeah.
That's very unhinged.
Yeah.
Because you're not thinking, it's not no clear fault really going on. Obviously, this guy's not got clear faults anyway. But then just having that other side where is other people don't notice this side of him as well. Bizarre, fascinating, creepy.
Yeah.
Poor Bjork, how nice of her to send flowers to the family.
Yeah.
That fucked up. To be fair, it's probably good he didn't meet Goldie. Goldie had probably smacked him around like fucking definitely. No business. And he was quite racist towards Goldie, wasn't he, in the video? Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And ladies and gentlemen, you can see this 2-hour video on YouTube of this fella.
I'm going to paint my face with a green and red, like that way, you know, when George and shit finds me, you know, it won't be that much of a shock. It'll be a depersonalized type of thing. I look weird as fuck, and it'll help with the coping mechanism. It'll make it seem unreal, unrealistic. So that'll help with the, you know, traumatization part. I mean, I'm real sorry. I'm really sorry for what, you know, I'm gonna do to them. I mean, not that much, because I'm still gonna do it. But I am real sorry for what, you know, their pain. Sometimes, you know, I think, wow, man, this would be so much easier if I was, you know, living by myself in some state where nobody knows me. I don't have any family. Then, oh, you know, no problem. I would have turned into a psycho serial killer or some shit, you know, long ago. One thing is very, very important to stress. This is extremely important. I am not doing this. I'm not killing myself. Okay, this is the thing. I'm on a mission. My mission is not to fuck up Bjork. Okay. My main objective is to end my life. Now, as I'm going down, I'm gonna screw her up. Whether I screw her up or not, my family's gonna suffer. So, you know, I don't think it's fair for my family to be suffering and for her not to. So, now it's an equal share, everything. So, remember, I'm not doing this. I'm not killing myself to avoid capture, to, you know, this and that, because I can't take it. You know, you know, I'm guilty. Fuck no. I'm dying because, you know, the fear of living exceeds that of dying. So, that's what's going on. I gotta stress that. And my suicide, I don't know if I should have a suicide note, because it's ridiculous with all this fucking videotape. And I'm still thinking how I'm gonna do the videotape shit, because I'd like the FBI to have it. That way she would get it. You know. It's kind of maniacal to be thinking, wow, why would she take an interest in me after me doing this to her? But the obvious question that comes to mind, I don't know if you can see me there, the obvious question that will come into anybody's mind is, who would do this? Why the fuck did he do this? I'll leave it very much as a mystery. Because it'd be very brief. One of my last wishes is to fuck you up.
Wow.
Yeah, scary.
So that's our celebrity,
that's
what, fandom.
That's a celebrity stalker, yeah.
Look who's stalking.
Yeah. So yeah, I got a few more for you. So this one is the story of Richard Farley and Laura Black. Richard Farley was born in Texas on July 25th, 1948. He was the oldest of six children. His father was in the military, so the family relocated quite a lot. Eventually, they settled in California. He graduated high school in 1966 and attended Santa Rosa Junior College. He joined the Navy in 67 and he stayed there for 10 years. So after his discharge in 77, he began working as a software technician at ESL Incorporated, which is a defence contractor in Sunnyvale, California. In April 1984, 36-year-old Farley met 22-year-old Laura Black, who also worked at ESL. Farley was immediately smitten and later said that he fell instantly in love with her.
That sounds romantic.
Only if you feel the same way, I suppose. You don't really want to hear that from someone, do you? And be like,
Love? It's a bit full on. Yeah. Can you not just fancy me?
Steady on, mate. Farley began leaving gifts, including letters and homemade bread, on Laura's desk, and asked her out numerous times. Yeah, but like,
well, but this is where it goes into that thin line of, that's quite nice, then it goes into the point of obsession.
When you go, look, I'm not interested, and then it continues, it's just like, what is this all about?
Yeah.
Black repeatedly refused the invitations and later said in an interview that she tried really to ignore him but to be cordial, so she was trying to like keep the peace, obviously, as well, because your mind would instantly go there and think stalker, you know, so you've got to try and keep them on some kind of
some level.
But then at the same time, are they just going to see that as as you kind of reciprocating what they're
wanting. Which is what
we've
been talking about, and which
it's
is
so difficult.
It's very hard because each individual is going to be different.
Yeah.
Where you'd think, well, the standard baseline here, I'll just be nice. Oh, that's nice. Thank you. Thanks for that. No, I'm busy tonight. No,
yeah.
Next week, I think I'm busy too. Trying to do that nicely.
Yeah.
But without being a horrible person, because in general, we try to not be horrible people in life. You know, it's good not to be. So it is hard, really hard
definitely.
To gauge what level. And like, even like on the Facebook and stuff, people messaging you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Despite her refusals, Farley persisted. He began calling her desk every few hours, as well as showing up at Black's aerobics class. By providing false information to the ESL HR department, Farley was able to obtain Black's home address and phone number. Farley was also known to have befriended the custodial department in an attempt to copy keys to Black's desk so he could rifle through her shit in her desk to gain an insight into her life. He was also known to have pried through confidential personnel files of Black. During this time, Farley was sending one or two letters to Black a week, though there were periods of time during which the letters would cease. In total, Farley sent about 200 letters over a period of 4 years, with the final letter being sent from his prison cell after his rampage at ESL.
Rampage, eh?
Dun, dun, dun.
What's going to happen in the rampage?
Black moved 4 times during 4 years, but Farley managed to get her address every single time. Farley doctored photos of him and Black together and mailed them to her. In fall of 1985, Black asked the Human Resources Department at ESL for help. ESL ordered Farley to attend psychological counselling sessions, and despite attending these sessions, his harassment of Black continued. By spring of 1986, Farley was threatening fellow ESL employees. Because of his poor performance, his employment with ESL was terminated in May 1986. He had been working there for 9 years and spent several months stalking Black full-time, then found work at a rival company, Covalent Systems Corporation, which was also in Sunnyvale. Black filed for a temporary restraining order against Farley on the 2nd of February 1988, and a court date was set for February 17th to see if the order should be made permanent. Farley bought a shotgun and various other weapons and equipment, and the restraining order did not prevent him from buying weapons during that time. He also owned a variety of other weapons which were not present during the shooting at ESL, including a big shotgun barrel and a Ruger carbine, as well as over 3,000 rounds of ammunition. On February 9th, 1988, he left a package with Black's attorney claiming to have evidence that he and Black had a long-standing relationship. The package included items such as photographs supposedly showing Black and Farley on dates, a garage door opener to Black's house, and a hotel and credit card receipts. Farley also claimed that Black kept a stash of cocaine that they had shared. Black's attorney dismissed the package as utter fabrications. On the day before the court date, on the 16th of February 1988, Farley drove his motorhome to the ESL parking lot. He later claimed he waited for Black to leave so he could convince her to rescind the restraining order. If she refused, he would kill himself. At about 3 p.m, Farley loaded up his guns, a semi-automatic shotgun, a rifle, a pump-action shotgun, a revolver, a fucking Magnum. He took all sorts with him, Smith & Wesson, a pistol. He also had a foot-long buck knife and a smoke bomb, and wore a bulletproof vest, earplugs and a glove. Carrying over 1,000 rounds of ammunition with him, he approached the building while shooting towards bystanders. He entered a side door by shooting through the glass and shot at employees he encountered while heading toward Black's office on the second floor. Several employees were killed by shots as he made his way through the building. Arriving at Black's office, he fired a shotgun round through the door, which hit her in the left shoulder, collapsing her lung. The injury made her pass out, and as she fell to the floor, Farley moved on. He held police SWAT teams at bay for 5 hours by moving from room to room through the building, so they couldn't get a target on him. Black regained consciousness and, along with other survivors, hid from him and eventually escaped. Farley surrendered to the police after requesting a sandwich and a soft drink. He killed 7 people and wounded 4 more, including Black. The next day, Court Commissioner Lois Kettle made the restraining order against Farley permanent. Black survived but was hospitalised for 19 days. She continued to work for the same company, and Farley wrote to her again from his prison cell claiming she had finally won. During the trial, Farley admitted to the killings but pled not guilty, claiming that he had never intended to kill but only wished to get Black's attention or commit suicide in front of her for rejecting him. His attorney claimed that Farley was never a violent man and only had his judgment temporarily clouded by his obsession with Black, and that he would likely never kill again. Prior to the shooting, Farley did not have a criminal record. The prosecution documented every step of the stalking, produced all the letters he sent, and documented his shotgun and ammo purchases a week before the rampage. All this amounted to extensive planning, which was evidence of premeditation. On October 21st, 1991, Farley was found guilty of all 7 counts of first-degree murder. On the 17th of January 92, the Superior Court judge sentenced Farley to death. Because of California law, there were several automatic appeals. On July the 2nd, 2009, the California Supreme Court upheld Farley's death sentence, and as of 2020, Farley is still on death row in San Quentin Prison.
Wow.
So there you go.
Oh my God, this guy's extreme.
So that took fucking ages, didn't it? He's still there on death row. Crazy.
You could be on death row for years.
I think he was on
years and years
death row 23 years, was he?
You can be for years because of certain reasons. Mm. What the fuck? This is extreme stalking.
Crazy, yeah.
This is the amount of
stuff he took with him as well is insane.
Like arming himself up properly. This is the trouble with being able to access such weaponry, you know.
It is, but at the same time, if they can, you know, if people can get that, you'd want a gun, wouldn't you, to defend yourself? I would. Like we said the other day, I was like, I'd want a gun if he's coming after me.
But if you're going to have access to guns in the first place.
But yeah, it is easy for people to...
Wow, though, that's an extreme case.
Yeah.
That's taking stalking to the extreme. Did he turn up in aerobics clothes, do you reckon?
I don't know. I just had pictures of him at the window.
Oh, not over a little headband.
Let's get physical.
And he come in and just start doing the twists and turns.
I didn't think of him like that. I just thought of him at the window.
Isn't it ironic or slightly apt that a stalker got a surveillance job?
Yeah.
Sending a letter. You finally won. She's thinking, what? What game are we playing? What have I won?
Yeah.
I've won that you're in prison, but yeah. I didn't think I was in a win or lose situation in the first place.
Yeah, totally.
Likely to never kill again.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I think he went over the top because
he is obsessed by a certain person.
You know,
he would forget everything else, just walk in the room. Why didn't he wait till she is at home and go and do it? He was doing this to make a message, do a big thing, saying this is a big performance for everybody and I'll be on TV and everything. He knew what was going to happen with this. He knew what was going to happen.
Yeah,
the situation
was
being
so
on TV.
Stuff.
I want a sandwich and a fizzy drink. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, he was doing this because he wanted that whole thing,
wasn't it?
Almost made me think of Chapman, who killed John Lennon, sort of thing, outside his house. That's a great stalking case.
Oh, okay. So I don't really know much about that. I'm not really.
Well, he just went to where John Lennon's hotel was, but he got to know everybody there. He was downstairs talking to the hotel bellhop and all the people, and they all got to know him, thought he was all right. Then one day he's like, oh, I'm going to do it. There he is.
Shit.
And I was like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Wow.
This guy, though, this is stalking. This is extreme stalking.
Yeah,
this is,
totally. This is, that's just insane. That's like planning, you know,
This is premeditated.
Yeah.
And he never fucking did it properly. What he meant to do anyway.
Yeah.
No, he didn't kill her.
No,
that, what he wanted to
it
do.
It just seems crazy to me that he would say he never intended to kill those people. He only wanted to get her attention and, like, commit suicide in front of her. So then why go in there with so many fucking guns?
You go with one gun,
a smoke
and one bullet.
Bomb and a fucking big knife, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the knife as well. What are you going to do with a knife?
Why would you go in there like that if all you wanted to do was get her attention?
So was he trying to use that as some excuse in the court?
Yeah, of course he was, I think.
Of course.
You know, I reckon it was kind of revenge for him as well. Obviously he didn't say that, but he got fired from that job. You know, did he do that as partly as revenge and think, well, I'm going to take it out on her and take it out on them at the same time?
Yeah.
But yeah, fucking...
That is fucking insane.
Yeah,
lunatic.
Definitely.
I don't know where you're going to take me now after that, really. It's just gone worse and worse and
I'm
worse.
I'm going to take you into the world of ladies' knickers as masks and bodies in bins.
Oh, God. Is that a book you're going to write one day?
Yeah.
Ladies' knickers as masks. Well, we're living in a coronavirus world.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
So maybe this guy's going to be ahead of the times.
It's one way of talking about him.
Who's this in?
Right, we're going to go into the world of Stephen McDaniel.
And we've got a little audio clip of this fellow, haven't
we? Oh, yeah,
we
have. Yeah, we'll play that in a bit. That's the interview of him by the news, TV news.
So after we finish, we just drop it in, like we did with the other, we just sort of dropped it in. Okay.
Okay, so Stephen McDaniel. So he's 28 and a graduate from the Mercer University School of Law in Georgia. He was a neighbour of 27-year-old Lauren Giddens, also a student at the same school. He'd asked Lauren out on dates on a number of occasions, but she'd always refused, telling her friends that she found him creepy and unnerving. She also told friends that she felt anxious about returning to her apartment late at night, that it felt like someone was watching her, and that it also felt like someone had been in her apartment while she wasn't there. She thought about moving several times, but she didn't go through with it. When Lauren hadn't been heard from for a few days and was not answering her phone, concerned friends let themselves into her apartment. This is in June 2011. Her friends let themselves into her apartment with the key they had and discovered that her passport, driver's license and other items were still there. And at this point, Stephen McDaniel had seen them through his window and he'd gone over there to help.
Yeah, he's a neighbour, isn't he?
This is the neighbour, yeah, Stephen McDaniel. So this girl's gone missing. He's gone over there to help her friend search her apartment. So they discover that all her shit's still there, so, like, she can't have gone far. So they notify the police and the search begins. Lauren's torso was found in a trash can next to the apartment block. And the rest of her remains were not found, and the investigation switched from missing persons case to a murder case. Police began conducting interviews with her neighbours and classmates, one of those obviously being Stephen McDaniel, who's both.
We can play that.
Yeah.
Should we play that now?
Well, hang on. I was just going to say here, Stephen McDaniel joined the search for Lauren, and he was interviewed by a local TV news crew. So all the while claiming that he didn't know of anyone that would want to hurt her and that she needed to be found.
So we may as well listen to that clip now then.
Yep, so we can listen to that now.
Person that was living there?
Yeah, Lauren was my neighbor. We're just trying to find out where she is at this point. I mean, no one has seen her since Saturday. I mean, the last time anyone heard from her was an email that she sent out, and I mean, no one's heard from her since.
Did you see her hang out with anyone at the time?
I mean, no one has seen her since Saturday. I haven't seen anything. I mean, I've always heard noise outside, but it's just people walking by, pretty much.
And she just recently graduated from Mercer?
Yeah, she and I, we were both JD students. We graduated back in May.
What kind of person was she? I mean, what did you see
her? I mean, she's as nice as can be. I mean, very personable, very much a people person.
Do you know anybody that, any enemies she might have had, somebody that might want to hurt her?
No, we don't know where she is. The only thing we can think is that maybe she went out running and someone snatched her. Because, we went over, one of her friends had a key, we went inside and tried to see if there was anything amiss, but, she had a door jammed that was sitting right by it, so there was no sign that anyone broke in. The door was locked when everyone got here. We just don't know where she is.
What about in the parking lot area? I know they've been doing a lot of, I think that's where they have recovered the body or whatever they recovered from there.
Body?
Had you seen anything there? Had you seen anything there? We don't know if this is the same person. You know what I mean? Like, they took out a body there earlier. We don't know if it's the same person or not. So that's how we're trying to ask people if they know who lived there. Are you okay, sir?
I think I need to sit down.
Okay.
So as you can say, when the newswoman... When the newswoman reveals to him that they've found part of a body, he appears visibly shocked and he sits down on the pavement. He was interviewed by police later that day and appeared anxious and fidgety throughout the interview. In the interview, McDaniel said he was a virgin and saving himself from marriage, which the police found strange, and they also noticed scratches on McDaniel's chest and face, which he said he'd done himself when he was sleeping.
Sleep scratching.
Yeah. They were highly suspicious of him, and they asked if they could search his apartment. So he reluctantly agreed and was taken back to where he lived in the apartment complex. When police entered, they found a collection of guns, swords, toilet rolls and stockpiled tins of food, as well as a mask made out of women's underwear. They also found loads of condoms, which they asked McDaniel why he would need them if he was staying celibate until he was married, and he said he'd stolen them from another apartment. The police then started to question him as the main suspect, and he acts really weirdly during the interrogation. That's on YouTube as well, if you wanted to have a look at that.
This dude, it's the one CCTV static camera, so it doesn't move, it just stays there looking from the police cell. And the fella, I thought through the whole thing really quickly, and his body frame does not move one bit. His head just slightly moves, and it's
the
stuff of horror movies.
It's
a horror movie thing. You'd watch it and be like, oh my god, this is real life though.
Yeah, and you can see even the police that are questioning him, they start to get nervous. There's one bit that the policeman kind of goes to him, look at me when I'm talking to you, and just swings his head round to look at him and just sits there. You can see the policeman kind of move back in his chair. He's fucking hell.
Well, the other policeman says, put your hands on the table. Put your hands on the table.
It's really scary. So he maintains his innocence throughout all the questioning, but he answers the questions in a really weird, monotone way. The evidence that was found in his apartment was, irrefutable, though. They found a USB stick that contained hundreds of pictures of Lauren and videos that were taken inside her apartment. A hacksaw was found in a supply closet on the apartment complex, stained red with what DNA testing would confirm as Lauren's blood. The packaging for the same hacksaw was found in McDaniel's apartment. So faced with the evidence, McDaniels pleads guilty and he took a plea deal to avoid the death sentence, giving a full confession of his action in court. He had become obsessed with Lauren. He had spied on her for months using a camera attached to a 6-foot-long wooden stick standing beneath her second-floor apartment and videoing her. He had also stolen a master key from the apartment's office and had a copy made so he could enter her apartment unnoticed. So she knew that at the beginning as well. She said, before she disappeared, she said to her friend she felt like someone had been in there. So there's a lesson for you. Trust your intuition. Fucking hell. So he could enter her apartment unnoticed. He'd become devastated that he would never see her again after they graduated. He detailed how he had startled Lauren awake at 4:30 a.m. on Sunday, June the 26th, after he entered her apartment dressed all in black. She saw me and said very calmly, "Get the fuck out." I leapt across the bed onto her and grabbed her by the throat. We fell out of the bed and onto the floor. During the struggle, Lauren managed to pull the mask from McDaniel's face and pleaded, "Stephen, please stop." McDaniel clenched his hands around her throat for 15 minutes until she stopped moving, then dragged her to the bathroom and placed her in the bathtub. According to his confession, he then returned to his own apartment next door and spent the entire day on his computer, returning later that evening with a hacksaw. I removed her limbs and head, wrapped them in several black trash bags and discarded them in the law school dumpster, he wrote. He then put Lauren's torso in the apartment trash can on June 28th, 2 days before it was found. There was no evidence of sexual assault on the corpse. McDaniel was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole and is currently housed at the high security Hancock State Prison in Sparta, Georgia.
Wow. Yeah. So this is a neighbour who, and then does that whole thing of helping out, is on the news. It's like that dude who killed that child in the bath in England, and then he's on the news and he's helped out the search
the guy, the two little girls,
yeah. And it's just like just the fucking nerve of it to do that.
It's insane, isn't it?
I like the fact that he was fully ready for the COVID world though, wasn't he? He was fucking, he was. Knicker masks.
Yeah.
Wait, I didn't hear you say the knicker mask thing. Where about the knicker mask thing?
So what mask was made from ladies' underwear when the police went to search
his house. That was there. Yeah.
Yeah, they found it.
So he had though tins of food there.
Yeah, stockpiled food, loads of bog rolls. So he was ready for COVID, weren't he?
He was ready, except he happened to be a stalker,
fucking lunatic. What? Chopping people up.
So he had loads of condoms. So he's trying not to leave DNA. He's going to have sex with her lots and lots.
I don't know, because he didn't have sex with her. He didn't rape her.
So what's that all about?
I don't know. Very strange.
When he's interrogated, do you think he's in shock? That's why, the way he's reacting.
I don't know. I wouldn't say he's in shock. I would say he would go into some kind of shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'd be in shock. Maybe in shock at being arrested.
Mm.
I wouldn't say in shock over what he'd done.
No. And he's... You can imagine if Ted Bundy was in the digital age a bit more. Obviously, Ted Bundy was sentenced to death early 90s. Cameras are a bit bigger then. You can imagine Ted Bundy, because he used to like to have a wank outside ladies' windows, ladies' dormitories. You can imagine him having a camera on a big fucking pole.
Yeah.
And filming through a window.
Definitely.
That kind of... I've never really thought about that. The fact that you could put a little GoPro...
Yeah.
...on a stick, or get a really long stick and put it up there. And that is probably going on right this second. Probably right this second. There's someone filming through a window, someone.
Yeah.
And never actually realised how that could be done, how easy that could be done.
Scary.
So when he's at home on his computer... Yeah, he killed her. Goes back home to his computer, spends a day in there. Is he looking up body disposal? What's he doing?
I don't know.
The fact that he said he spent his day on the computer. Yeah. I wonder. I guess it would have been in a report if they'd have looked, because they would have looked into his search history.
Yeah.
Just to have that obsession, do that. Then, like your neighbour, go over, end up. What was his plan? What was he going to do when he went in there? If he wasn't going to rape her, what was he going to do? And did he plan on killing her? The fact that he went through with it so easily, he must have thought in his mind.
I think he did say it just escalated. He didn't mean to.
So what was he meaning to do? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you plan on doing?
Going to go in there dressed all in black at 4:30 on a Sunday morning. You know what? What kind of intentions do you have?
And if you don't plan it, so he obviously wanted to have sex with her.
If your intentions aren't nefarious,
he said he wasn't going to rape her.
You would turn up during the day, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
on a Sunday afternoon and go, "Hi, how are you?" You know, do you want a cup of tea, etc. But if you've got like nefarious intentions,
but he said he wasn't
fucking in the middle of the night.
Yeah, he said he wasn't going to have sex with her. He didn't want to, but obviously that's a lie. And he was probably going there to rape her. Must have been. Did he have condoms on him? We don't know.
No, there's no mention of it. But there's no mention of any sexual assault. There's no evidence of it.
escalated to the fact that you put her torso in a bin.
Yeah.
Did you not think of going further afield, or like, do you not like just the torso? So what happened to the other limbs? Where did they find them?
He put them in a different dumpster. Like,
so a limb, just in what, all of them together?
I think he said he put the legs and arms into
the school one. But what?
The school one. What? And then he put the body into the apartment bin.
What about the head?
I don't know.
That's the shocking one, yeah. When you find a head in a bin.
Yeah, definitely.
And going back to his youth and stuff, what was up with him? He was all right. He didn't seem too bad.
There's no real record of how he was when he was younger, but he's definitely got something wrong with him. He's got issues.
Yeah, I got
a
feeling.
He's got issues proper that aren't being looked at, you know. Or probably are now, but weren't being looked at. He was... there was something going wrong with him.
Unfortunately, you have to have case examples for things to then be approved and things for to be moved and happen and things to be watched out for. Unfortunately, we have to have these examples because we're still learning how the fucking crazy psyche of the mind works and what deviant evil can just be done by humans. That's your last case, wasn't it?
No.
Oh my gosh!
No, not at all.
Oh my golly gosh!
No, strap myself in. I've still got another one. Yeah, this is the last one.
Oh, okay. Right. Is it like that? Didn't seem as bad. There wasn't so many people killed in that one, but there was a body chopped up.
Still bad, yeah.
I know. Where are you taking me on this though? Because this is like a roller coaster ride. I feel like I've started going down a bit.
Oh, well, this one's kind of just an odd one. This one's, I suppose you'd say, the victim of the stalking was a house, which is kind of like
that's a weird one.
An odd.
Well, is there
odd little story?
You're gonna have obsession. People get obsessed with their iPhones.
Yeah.
Or I'm just an example, or technology or something, the new game has come out, the new film, obsession, then it dies out and like, you know, could you class that as stalking? It's not really, because you're not actually stalking a particular person or something.
Yeah.
So this is a house obsession then?
Yeah, I suppose you could call it the house obsession.
So if we made this a movie, we could call it The House That Was Obsessed? No, because then we're saying the house obsessed. I'm going to stop talking now, trying to come up with a movie idea for this. All right, go on then.
Okay, The Westfield Watcher.
That's the movie title.
In June 2014, Derek and Maria Broaddus purchased what they thought was their dream home in Westfield. They thought that the six-bedroom house at 657 Boulevard would be perfect for them and their young children. Only days after they closed the purchase of the house, the couple received a letter in the mail from someone calling themselves The Watcher. Part of the letter read, "My father watched in the 1960s. Now it is my time."
Wow. That sounds fucking... It sounds like a cool horror movie.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't want to say it sounds cool because this has actually happened to terrorise people.
At first, the couple did not know what to think and tried to brush it off, but unfortunately for them, the Watcher was just getting started. The first letter they received was delivered on the 5th of June, then a second, more sinister letter came in July. "I am pleased to know your names now and the names of the young blood you have brought to me. Who has the bedrooms facing the street? I'll know as soon as you move in. It will help me to know who is in which bedroom, then I can plan better." After this letter, the family were unnerved as it made reference to their children and started to take things more seriously. Before they could get a grasp on the situation, a third letter arrived in July. This letter mentioned the many doors and windows in the property, that they allow me to watch you as you move through the house. The author also wanted the couple to know who they were dealing with. "Who am I? I am the Watcher," the letter read. One of the letters that was sent asked, "Have they found what is in the walls yet? In time they will. Have you brought me the young blood I requested? Once I know their names, I will call them out to me. I asked the Woods, the prior owners, to bring me young blood. This last line set off alarm bells for the Broaddus's, and they filed a lawsuit against the previous owners, seeking a nullification of their contract, punitive damages and a refund of the purchase price with interest. The previous owners of the house, John and Andrea Woods, have not commented publicly about the incident. As far as the lawsuit against them, Mr. and Mrs. Woods responded by filing a lawsuit of their own against the Broaddus's, accusing them of frivolous litigation and defamation. They have also requested that the case go to trial. Records show that the Broaddus's originally paid $1.3 million for the North Jersey home, but by February of 2015, the family had had enough and put the house up for sale for $1.5 million before dropping the price to $1.25 million. Throughout the entire ordeal, the Spook family have never moved into the house. As far as the actual investigation into the letters and their writer, Mr. and Mrs. Broaddus sent the letters to the Westfield Police Department. He managed to obtain a DNA sample, which was identified as belonging to an unknown female. Additionally, an FBI profiler examined the letters and was of the opinion that the writing was likely done by an older person. Many amateur sleuths think that a disgruntled potential buyer lost out on purchasing the home and were trying to force the Broaddus's out, while some have theorised that Mr. and Mrs. Broaddus themselves had buyer's remorse and went so far as to create this fake threat in an effort to undo the purchase. The investigation into this case remains active, and I can update that the house finally sold for $959,360. And here are some of the creepier bits out of the letters that were sent. 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls of 657 Boulevard? Why are you here? I will find out. 657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in. It has been years and years since the young blood ruled the hallways of the house. Have you found all the secrets it holds yet? I pass by many times a day. 65 Boulevard is my job, my life, my obsession. Maybe a car accident, maybe a fire, maybe something as simple as a mild illness that never seems to go away but makes you feel sick day after day after day. Maybe the mysterious death of a pet. Loved ones suddenly die, planes and cars and bicycles crash, bones break. Will the young blood play in the basement, or are they too afraid to go down there alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. It is far away from the rest of the house. If you were upstairs, you would never hear them scream. Have a happy moving in day. You know I will be watching.
You never hear them scream.
Yeah.
This is almost like, did you check the children?
Yeah, definitely.
That is a movie in itself, and I'm going to write that fucking movie, because that is... I'm quite happy no one died.
Yeah,
my first thing straight away is the owners.
Yeah.
You know, who the previous owners. But then after the rest of it, you're like, did they check the history of the building? Because the generations before that, once upon a time...
Yeah.
What if this kid's granddad or this person's grandfather, when they were a child themselves, their father or something who was very mentally ill or something said to him, you're slapping him on the head, you watch this house, yeah. You watch this house and you tell him to watch, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just kind of loony, and it just spiraled into this thing. This guy said to his grandchild, you look at this, do you know what I mean? Like something like that.
Yeah.
And what's in the walls? Is there something in the walls?
Yeah.
Fuck, when you get this letter, then at night time you're in the house, then you hear a creepy noise or something, or it's just something happening, just a natural noise. But then your mind's going to go, the fuck was that?
Yeah,
what's
definitely
in these walls? Like, you'd have to get those scans to go through the house, checking it out, scanning the walls. that's just, it sounds like a folk cult lead or something, sending the letters. I've checked with the woods and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's an incredible story. Mm. I'm glad no one's killed and no one's too badly traumatised by this. And I can, if anything, they would go, oh, that was a creepy thing to tell at a party.
Yeah,
because I understand that the owners then countersued.
Yeah.
Back saying that, which I'm almost believing, yeah, they're probably sort of saying, no, fucking, or like someone saying, a disgruntled person that missed out on the sale of the house. I'm going to possibly like it. Well, I'm going with that generation thing.
Yeah.
I'm basically making up a story now in my head, and I'm going to think about this more. Generations of Watchers.
Yeah.
I think that's great. Yeah. What is it? What's it called? What do you call that story?
The Westfield Watcher.
So good. Blood sample. Was that on the letter then?
No. Well, DNA sample. Wasn't blood.
DNA sample of what? Just on the letter, some DNA?
Well,
of
yeah.
Some description.
It'd be like skin,
and
I suppose, wouldn't it? Or something. That's
and
come
they
off
said it was an old...
An older female.
But they didn't know any more?
No. Well, they deduced it was female from the DNA, but the guy, the profiler, the FBI profiler, deduced that it was likely an older
wow.
female.
How paranoid would you be? Look out your window and there's an old person standing there looking at your house.
Yeah.
Because we watch them, we like to go down a rabbit hole of CCTV footage on YouTube.
Yes.
And you get the ones where you do get people just staring at houses.
Yeah, like that dude on the bike. I know.
Taking photos.
I think the guy in
no,
the house
binoculars,
was quite
wasn't
a
it?
Young kid.
Binoculars.
They?
But that
but
guy
like,
was creepy.
I would
yeah.
have been out there going, dude, what the fuck are you doing outside my house? I'd proper looking through my window. I'd be well annoyed at him.
Hmm.
Oh, fuck off, mate.
But that house one, that house one was fascinating and creepy as fuck.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm totally happy no one died, no one was traumatised or had PTSD.
Yes.
But that was creepy as fuck.
Yes.
And that's your last story.
It is.
Wow,
yeah.
That's a good one to go out on.
Yeah, totally.
My God.
Yeah, so they're our stalkers for today.
Good, there's no stalkers tomorrow, hopefully.
No, that's it, stalkers is over now. yeah, we've got some stalker movie suggestions though, because we've both
Look Who's Stalking,
yeah,
Look Who's Stalking
both,
2, Look Who's Stalking 3.
We both like watching movies. I thought some good ones are Misery, Fatal Attraction, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, 1 Hour Photo as well. That's really
yeah,
good.
Well,
with
Williams,
Robin Williams.
Yeah.
That's a really cool.
It's any sort of film that he did of that sort of.
Yeah, he's
that
really
type.
Good in that.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Man.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Developing photos of the family.
Yeah, and he goes in their house, doesn't he, as well, when they're not there. He's always sitting on the sofa.
It,
it's like, fucking hell. Death Proof, that's quite stalky. And Cape Fear.
Yeah, and there's many other types of stalky
Yeah,
type
there's
films.
Loads of other stalky films.
But there are some
But I thought they're the ones of note, really.
Wow, stalking.
Yeah. And we'll just give out a National Stalking Helpline, of course, if you are having trouble with stalking. 0808 802 0300.
And that's UK,
and that's
though.
UK, yeah.
If you are obviously around the world, there is going to be prevention.
You have your own
places,
helplines
you can,
and stuff, places
just
you
go on
can
the internet
phone.
And you can, you know, if you feel like you are threatened in any way, and don't
definitely.
Let it escalate. Don't let those Facebook ads or those Twitter ads or whatever.
Do get in touch with the police
let them go
as well, because
well,
even if they're not going to actually like do anything, at least they'll record it. And if you've got a log of like that shit,
well, like that lady, young lady, and her father ended up building the case.
Yeah, totally.
Jesus, you know. But yeah, maybe keep a log of these things.
Yeah,
screenshot
definitely.
The stuff.
Yeah.
That's what you get though. Now you get these name and shames.
Yeah.
So often do I say, check out what this wanker said today. Those random people on the internet
definitely.
And there's screenshots, and you're going to read it, and you're just like, what
exposed.
The hell?
It's definitely
yeah, and then the exposed
people are a lot quicker and easier.
But it's so easy just to make a fake profile.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Move on and do it again.
Yeah.
Wow.
There you go, stalkers.
There you go. Well, I'm glad that we don't have stalkers.
Yes, me too.
And I don't stalk you and you don't stalk me.
Yes.
Well, you might do. See you peering through while I'm having a shower.
Oh, God.
What's that?
You live too far away for me to do that.
You have to have a really long telescope.
Yeah.
It's a really long telescope. What are we doing next?
We are going to do John George Haig, the acid bath murderer.
The acid bath murderer.
Yeah.
And he is from that it happened in a town that you grew?
He was born in my hometown, and this episode was suggested by my lovely friend Sharon Johnson. So thank you for that.
Okay, but I don't know nothing about it. Do you know lots about this?
I know a little bit.
Did you know about it when you were a child?
I knew about it when I was younger, not when I was a child. But yeah, it's only recently I did find out that he was from Stamford, actually.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So you didn't actually know? Oh, right, cool.
No, I kind of heard of him, but not really looked into it.
To find out it's, what it happened in your...
I don't think it happened in my hometown.
But he was from the same as you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yes, we'll be covering him and hearing all about him putting his bodies in barrels of acid and...
This is old school, though, isn't
it?
What
were
we talking,
school,
1900s?
Like 20s, maybe.
20s.
20s, 30s.
Early 1900s, okay.
I think it's around then.
So, like, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that'd be fascinating to see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
and
it's going to be an interesting one.
You can always give us some suggestions and things, or anything you'd like us to cover. Anything at all, really, and we can look into it.
Yeah, totally.
It's good to have an actual case, though, rather than just a topic. It's good to have a case study we can go in more in depth with. But that's cool. I'm glad you've shared these things with me, of these crazy fucking lunatics and their stalkerisms.
Definitely. I've got it off my chest.
Yeah, and listeners, you can go on YouTube and check out some of these. Do check out the Mike Reed woman, though, because that will just make you... She looks like a sort of person who's probably... would hurt someone, but probably didn't mean to actually do it.
Yeah, but I feel like real bad for her, bless her.
Yeah.
Like, I am laughing... She is funny.
I wasn't laughing. I was just in shock.
I feel quite bad for her.
That's it. With some of these people, you feel a little bit bad for them.
She just wants someone to look after.
She just wants to be loved.
But then saying that, she was married.
And he probably had too much and went,
I bet he was like, because he said, I don't know why she does it, didn't he? Like the ex-husband. So he must have, she must have been doing it while she was with him, so...
Got too much and just,
Well, there you go. But yeah, you can check that out on YouTube. You can check out Ricardo Lopez, some other bits and bobs you can look at on there. Stephen McDaniel's interview.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there.
There's a doco on him as well.
Yeah,
you can see his police interview weirdness. And
Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for coming along. Please subscribe to us. Do check out Foxy's Fantastic Fabrications on Etsy.
Yeah, and Facebook.
For all your crazy crocheted creations.
Yeah.
That's the CCC.
Well done with your alliteration there, dear.
That's a good one. Check out deadboltfilms.com. If you just go to the website, it will take you to other podcasts, it'll take you to short films, it'll take you to feature films, it'll take you to things. Check that out, and apart from that, please subscribe, come back, check us out again on another
episode.
Come back
next time for some acid bath murder.
If you want to discover audibly how bodies decompose in acid, Sarah's going to share that with us all.
Yeah.
And when I say with us all, I'm with you, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll be bringing it to you.
And that's it. Tonight, everybody, make sure those doors are locked.
Yeah, definitely.
The curtains are shut.
Yeah.
Because somebody...
Bye-bye.
If you like this show, please check out the podcast on Haunted Hill and deadboltfilms.com for all our independent horror films. Thank you.